You're listening to WHYY. I'm Matt Gillum. Halloween is upon us, meaning it's time for tricks, treats, ghouls, and goblins. With the holiday falling on a Friday this year, you can bet parties will be in full force and doorbells will be ringing nonstop. Since the calendar is providing a scary, easy tie-in, we are gabbing about the Ghastly Garden with our go-to garden ghoul and maven of the macabre, Jenny Rose Carey. Delighted to have you for a special Halloween edition.
What lovely names I have.
Hey, you know, we're being thematically appropriate. We love it. Now, there are so many beautiful and gentle plants out there, and we have talked about many of them, but let's dive into some of the more wily and creepy ones. The first one that comes to mind for me is the famous corpse flower. Tell us a little bit about this behemoth and its alluring scent.
Okay. If you have been to the Philadelphia Flower Show and walked into the what's called the Hamilton Horter Court, which is where people bring in their potted plants, you may have smelled it because you don't see it first. You smell it first. And it wafts across the flower show and everyone's like, what the heck is that awful smell? So it is truly frightful for a Halloween plant. It doesn't bloom every year. It is enormous. And some of our local public gardens have flowering specimens, often more in the summertime. But it grows from a corm, so it is a bulbous plant. But it throws up this sort of incredible, like, vase-shaped thing, and then some protuberance comes out at the center of it, and you're just like, oh, I don't know if I like that plant. So it's appropriate for Halloween.
It's feet tall, too.
It is very, very tall and very ugly in my mind, and too smelly. You have a clothespin on your nose when you approach.
And the actual scent of rotting flesh that it sends out, not one of your favorites.
No, it is not. No, I love scented plants, but Matt, no, not one of my favorites.
Not going to be buying the candle of that one.
No.
Oh, alas. All right, well, let's go from the rare and fragrant giant to a couple of creepy carnivorous plants that, you know, you can grow at home. Tell us about your experiences with pitcher plants or Venus flytraps.
Well, the first time I saw a Venus flytrap was in the wild when I was growing up in England, because my dad is a botanist. If you go down to the Carolinas and some parts of the listening area down into the Pine Barrens, some of the carnivorous plants are actually able to grow outside and they're wild and native to this area. So the pitcher plants you'll see have a hood, very appropriate, nice hood over the top that stops the insects flying back out again when they get trapped in. So they get lured in, they fall in, and they drown in the secretions at the bottom of the pitcher plant. And then if they have got half a wing left and they try and fly out, the hood stops them.
So monstrous.
I know. It's not the easiest one to grow inside, but if you want to try them outside, look for hardy pitcher plants. They need acidic soil, they need moisture, but they are perfectly fine in most of the listening area. Some people grow them in like old bathtubs or something like that. You know, you can make a
touch of whimsy and horror together.
I know, yes.
Wait, how about the Venus flytrap?
Oh, the Venus flytrap, we always used to buy them for the girls. They are very difficult. They always buy them for children, but they are not that easy to keep going because you have to feed it flies if you're bringing it into the house.
Mm.
You know, depends what type of house you have. If you have plenty of flies, maybe they'll be fine.
If you're the Addams family, probably not going to be much of a problem.
I know, yes. But they are fun. I mean, they're just amazing to see. And I think it's a sort of gateway to plants for young people in particular, because if you give a youngster a plant of some sort that is interesting, and, you know, we don't think of plants as moving, but these things actually move. Like a sensitive plant is another one, a mimosa, that will move until you touch it 10 times, and then you're like, I'm done, I'm not moving anymore. But, you know, there are a few plants that move, but I think kids need more. Back to instant gratification again.
Well, we can't talk Halloween gardening without mentioning pretty but poisonous plants. Things like monk's hood and wolf's bane have famously been used in poisons for centuries, but they can actually be cultivated with a fair amount of caution, right?
There are many poisonous plants, and always I recommend, once you've been gardening, do wash your hands. And, you know, things like foxglove is also very poisonous in large amounts, so you don't want to chew on it. but it's been used as a heart medicine. So digitoxin comes from that plant. Generally, if you're gardening with children, I would avoid things like a castor bean plant. And obviously, there is a thing called castor oil, but this castor bean plant grows to like 8 foot with spiky balls on it. I mean, it's a really funky looking thing, but I wouldn't grow it, you know, if you've got little kids that put things in their mouths. But there are even poison gardens. If you look up in the north of England, there's a very famous poison garden at Alnwick Castle. They take great pleasure in telling you that in the course of the year, several people faint as they're going around this garden. So it's not a thing to mess with, and always wash your hands, wear gloves if you can. But it's fun. There's books on poison plants as well.
So be aware, poison plants are potent.
Yes, they are.
Well, we have been discussing creepy plants and ghoulish gardening with author and soil sorceress Jenny Rose Carey. Thank you for making the time for our special Halloween edition.
My pleasure.